40 greetings to all of our Voice of America listeners. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Well, it's sometimes said that good things come to those who wait. Well, today we have a few instances that seem to prove that true in the sports world. And we begin in the western United States in the city of Los Angeles, California. Last week, we told you that the International Olympic Committee was likely to award either the 2024 or 2028 Summer Olympic Games to Los Angeles and then the other to Paris. The only question was which year each city would host. Well, the Los Angeles Times reporting that city officials have finalized a deal for Los Angeles to host the 2028 Olympic Games. It would be the first Olympic Games in Los Angeles since they hosted the 1984 Summer Olympics and the first Summer Olympics in the United States since the 1996 Games in Atlanta. So it will be a bit of a wait until the Olympics returns to the U.S., but people are already getting excited, including President Trump, who said he's confident that the Summer Games in Los Angeles will exemplify both the Olympic ideal and the American spirit, adding that the United States looks forward to hosting them. Meanwhile, the official LA 2028 Twitter account tweeted a promo video featuring some of the United States' biggest sports stars, along with this message: a new chapter in the city's Olympic story, where dreams become reality, ideas shape the future, champions are made. Now, those feelings aren't universal. Some are concerned about the cost of the games and security, an issue that's prompted many cities around the world to pull their Olympic bids. But for the most part, the sentiment can be summed up in this phrase: we can't wait. Well, as someone who shaped the game of tennis over the past 50 years, Donald Dell knows a thing or two about waiting for good things to come. He's waited as the game has evolved into the open era, allowing tennis players to make a career out of playing on tour. He's watched young talent develop and become some of the biggest stars of the game. And he's seen the media climate change, with the coverage of tennis on television and now social media. In part two of my interview with Donald Dell, we talk about these topics, but we start with something many people in the United States are waiting for: the next big American male tennis player, and why the U.S. seems to have fallen behind on the men's tour.
Well, first and foremost, you have to really understand that originally, back in the 60s, I keep referring to that, the late 50s and the 60s, there were three or four countries: America, Australia, Britain, France, Germany. Those five countries dominated world tennis. Jack Cramer and I came up with the ATP, and we came up with the ATP computer as a public relations idea. The ATP computer now ranks players up to about 800 players. The game of tennis has exploded well beyond those five countries. You know, I used to be ranked four in America. That was a big deal, to be in the top 10 in America. On a world calendar, four in America could have been 75 or 100 in the world. And so when you understand what's happened, the game, let's take an example. In the top 100 ranked players on today's ATP computer, top 100, 48 of them are from Eastern European. They're not American. So my point is, it's not that American tennis has gone down as much as the rest of the world has grown up. And the guys in Eastern Europe, like Djokovic, and a lot of the women, many of the women, it's their avenue, their vehicle to get out of the countries they're in, like Slovakia and Montenegro and all these small Eastern European. They don't want to be there. They want to travel. And so they use tennis, much the way the African Americans use boxing in America. How did they get out of America? They boxed like crazy, and they were great champions. The tennis is outgrown. American tennis is just a part of it. Now, still, we're trying like crazy. The USTA has just gotten a new campus, a college campus in Orlando. They spent $63 million building that place up. They got 100 courts, and let's see if they can attract. The battleground is the 8-year-old athlete coming out in America. What does he do? Does he play tennis, basketball, soccer, football? Football with the concussions, the parents are going to be fighting him. Basketball, all the kids love it, but you know, most of them are inner city kids because there are not many golf or tennis courts in the inner city. You don't see a lot of golf clubs in the inner city. So you're competing for these young athletes in America, and that's where the battleground is when they're 8 and 9 and 10 year olds. And they decide, well, I want to be a soccer player because in soccer it doesn't cost much, very little. They get a ball and shorts and they run and shoes and they play soccer. I don't think soccer's caught on yet in America culturally, but sure as hell, ESPN's doing everything to make it important. They're advertising and promoting and broadcasting it. They've made it really important now, much more. And the women's soccer players have had great teams lately. That's been a big thing. And so that's really what's happening in America. But in the tennis world, and I wanted to say this before I forget, the Williams sisters, Venus and Serena, have dominated world tennis on the American side, on the women's side, for the last 10 years, and they have been absolutely phenomenal. And I don't think they've really ever gotten their just dues. I mean, these are great. Can you imagine two sisters, 2 years apart, growing up and winning, you know, between the two of them, about 35 Grand Slam titles? I mean, that's just unheard of. I mean, it's a phenomenon you can't even. And they're very different type players. I mean, one is tall and thin and serves like a maniac, is Venus. The other is shorter and heavier and moves quicker and hits off both sides much better. I mean, it's a phenomenal. I can't say enough about the Williams sisters in the sport of American tennis, because I don't think people, they've come to take them for granted. I mean, it's phenomenal. You'll never see their day again with two people dominating, brothers or sisters that I can think of.
And one of the big points of praise for Venus and Serena Williams is that they have set the pace for tennis for African Americans. You look at young players like Sloane Stephens, 19-year-old Francis Tiafoe from the D.C. area.
Sure.
A lot of African Americans coming up and taking up tennis because of the Williams sisters. And even looking back further to Arthur Ashe, breaking that color barrier. Did you ever expect to see such a growth of the sport among African Americans, and how has that changed the game?
Yeah, I really did, but for a different reason. I managed Arthur for 23 years as his lawyer and manager. He was my first client, along with Stan Smith. And what most people didn't know, when Arthur was playing full boat and, you know, and they won Wimbledon 75, was ranked one, he was funding 7 or 8 players, young kids, on the tour, promising young players, mostly African American, 1 or 2 non-black, but he had 7 or 8 people. He was actually giving money to the families or to academies where they would go and train. And so I knew that. We didn't publicize it. He didn't want it publicized. But I always felt that the money was growing so fast. I mean, why do a lot of women parents push their women children into tennis? Because of the money. And I always thought the African Americans would start doing that as well. I think when Arthur died, that was a tremendous loss for all of that. And many of the African American athletes right away turned to football or basketball, because most African Americans don't grow up in country clubs, don't take tennis lessons when they're 6 years old. And so there's a whole lot of work going on culturally to get them more interested in tennis at a younger age. The young black athlete is turning to other sports. He's not even turning to soccer. He's not turning to hockey, because there are not a lot of hockey rinks in the inner city. So people say, well, why don't we see more blacks in a hockey? Because there's no hockey rinks. It's not complicated. And so I think that, you know, there's some great athletes out there, and I know the USTA is trying to capture them. Martin Blackman, who's running all of the U.S. Programs for young kids, happens to be an African-American. He was on the tour. He was a coach at American University. He's a very smart guy, and he's doing everything to attract people to tennis. I mean, that's his job. and the younger the better.
Well, I think that they've definitely set that pace, and I think it's only going to continue in the years to come, and we're already starting to see those dividends pay off from the efforts of people like Serena Williams, Venus Williams, and
others. I sure hope you're right. It would be great for the sport, no question, because they're the best athletes in many cases. But they don't have the training, you see. They don't have the original tools. I mean, how many young African-American, I mean, let's look at Tiger Woods is maybe the greatest golfer of all time. Who knows? I'm not trying to compare him to Jack Nicklaus or Palmer or Jordan Spieth today. I mean, our company manages, represents Spieth, so I'm pretty close to the golf situation still. But, you know, Tiger Woods was not a fluke, but sort of a one-off. I mean, because he grew up playing, in clubs as a young kid. His dad got him into a couple of public facilities out in California. He learned to play when he was very young. That's an exception. It's not the norm.
We'll have our third and final interview segment with Donald Dell on tomorrow's show, where we'll talk about the tennis tournament right here in Washington, D.C. that Dell founded 48 years ago and is still going strong to this day. I'm Andrew Palcheski in Washington, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America.
This is The Voice of America. Washington, D.C.
Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 1730 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America. VOA.
Well, there's a big fight coming up that fans are waiting for. I'm, of course, talking about the hotly anticipated Floyd Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight later this month. But one thing that fans aren't waiting for, the bill. Because to watch this fight on pay-per-view television here in the U.S., TV networks will charge reportedly $90 to $100 per subscription to view this fight. But it's a different story in the United Kingdom, where Sky Sports will reportedly charge just £20, about $26. This is getting a lot of reaction on social media, a lot of attention from fans in the UK who are pleased that the price will be fair. Fans in the US, however, a little disappointed at the discrepancy, saying, why do we have to pay upwards of $100 to see this fight? And we will continue to cover the reaction to that fight, and I'm sure there will be plenty in the next 3 weeks. We'll cover that right here on the Sunny Side of Sports. Well, fans of Major League Baseball's Chicago Cubs know what it's like to wait and wait and wait. The Cubs, of course, were facing a 108-year streak without winning a World Series championship. That is, until this past year, when they broke that run and won for the first time since 1908. It was a moment literally lifetimes in the making, and a moment that one fan named Steve Bartman was relieved to see in his lifetime. That's because back in 2003, the Cubs had a chance to go to their first World Series since 1945. Cubs outfielder Moises Alou was about to catch a foul ball late in the game when Bartman, sitting along the wall next to the field, tried to catch the ball instead, interfering with the play. The Cubs would go on to lose that game and eventually their chance at making it to the World Series that year. And many fans blamed Bartman for changing the game's momentum. For the past 13 years since that game, he's been a figure reviled by Cubs fans, with some saying that Bartman's interference cursed the team. That is, until last year, when the Cubs won that World Series. Now the team wants to make up for the negative attention that Bartman's received, and they're doing it in a big way. The team announced that they're giving Steve Bartman a 2016 World Series championship ring, an honor reserved for players and coaches on the team. After receiving that ring on Monday, Bartman released a statement which read in part, quote, "Although I do not consider myself worthy of such an honor, I am deeply moved and sincerely grateful to receive an official Chicago Cubs 2016 World Series championship ring. I am relieved and hopeful that the saga of the 2003 foul ball incident surrounding my family and me is finally over. A very good thing for a man waiting 13 years as a public pariah and his entire life as a fan of the Chicago Cubs."
Good on them.
Good on them indeed. And that voice you hear there is my VOA colleague, Doug Bernard, who is joining me here in the studio to talk about the latest trends in the sports world. Sporty greetings, Doug.
Sporty greetings. Can you imagine having lived over the past 13, 14 years, as Bartman has, with that hanging over, as he says, you and your family? I mean, just to emphasize, he was reviled in Chicago. Life was not easy for him.
Not at all. And you read about the details of this incident. He actually had to be escorted out of Wrigley Field by police, had police stationed at his house. His family had to change their phone numbers. And he, over the past 13 years, has refused interviews. He's refused appearances. He was going to make upwards of $100,000 to appear in a Super Bowl commercial.
Oh.
And he turned that down because he didn't want any of this notoriety. But it's a nice ending. And to top it all off, Moises Alou, that outfielder who could have made that catch, he's reportedly said, well, I wasn't going to catch it anyway. It was out of my range. So all of this might have been for naught anyway. But out of all of that turmoil, Steve Bartman gets that championship ring.
Era of good feelings.
Well, yes, it is.
There are no good feelings when it comes to the story that you previously mentioned. That is the McGregor-Mayweather fight that's coming up. And in fact, you were just talking about the variance in prices. Well, I was doing some looking around. Also, one of the hashtags trending right now in social media is, in sports, is hashtag McGregor-Mayweather. Generally speaking, that's for people who prefer McGregor over Mayweather. There's also another hashtag, hashtag Mayweather-McGregor. That's generally for people who prefer Mayweather. Here's Alex tweeting, though, I'd rather pour vinegar into my eyes than watch hashtag McGregor-Mayweather on Sky Sports box office. I'm not quite sure why he's unhappy about that. McGregor himself is tweeting out lots of pictures of his training. Other people, I mean, he looks really, really fit. I'm sure they're both going to be, you know, really fit and ready for this fight. Mark Robinson tweets out this. It's a picture of Conor McGregor, and he's wearing I'll just read what he says. Conor McGregor wearing the jersey of the NBA player who slept with Mayweather's wife.
Yes, there was a lot of gamesmanship going on between these two guys, a lot of back and forth, a lot of trash talking, and some creative trash talking, too, that we're seeing.
Absolutely. But let's just say that's harsh. quickly, let's go through a few other things. You may have earlier mentioned the fan dance is now over, the IOC announcing that Los Angeles will be getting the 2028 games. And so that's another hashtag that's trending right now, hashtag Olympics 2028. A number of people tweeting out their happiness about it. Some people not so excited. Let's see if I can just pull up a couple of these. I should have had them up before. Let's see. Here's one from Daniel Ramirez. Olympics coming to LA in 2028. I better get on the freeway now to make it in time.
Well, that was the thing. We talked about the security concerns, about the cost, but that's the big thing in Los Angeles, the traffic. On a good day in Los Angeles, it's bumper to bumper on the highways. One of these cities in the U.S. and really the world known for having horrible road conditions, horrible traffic. And so imagining that, I didn't even think about that aspect. That's going to be a headache.
Here's Alex Ferreira also tweeting out on that hashtag, my goal is to be out of LA by 2020, but before 2028 is a guarantee, I can see the logistical nightmare from here. So many people excited, but a number of, I think, Los Angelinos, Los Angelinians? I'm not sure. Los Angelinos,
your guess is
I think,
as good as mine.
Also, you know, raising, as you were mentioning, their concerns about what's going to be a tremendous snarl of just traffic and logistics and all kinds of things in 2028. Let's turn to Major League Baseball. That's August 1st, and that means all the trades are done. The trade season is over. And a lot of people talking about the Los Angeles Dodgers picking up let me pull up this particular story. His Japanese-American player, totally forgetting his name, Yu Darvish. He's a tremendous talent on the pitching mound. He's playing for the Rangers right now. The Dodgers, no slouch when it comes to pitching, but they've picked up Yu Darvish, and that's leading a lot of people on Twitter to talk about what's up with that, using the hashtag. A lot of them are using hashtag Dodgers Nation. A lot of people saying that this makes it increasingly likely that they expect to see the Dodgers in the World Series. Yeah. Let's see, here's...
Dodgers having a heck of a season. I mean, they've played about 105, 106 games and won about 74 or 75 of them, which is just an astounding number. Hasn't been done in a number of years that a team has won this many games at this point in the season. Mm-hmm. And certainly adding Yu Darvish is going to help them get, they hope, even further, all the way to that World Series championship.
Yeah, here's Howard Lee tweeting out, Yu Darvish, we welcome you with wide open arms. Here's Jacob Dix. Can't wait to see you at the WS, the World Series.
This now, did he spell that Y-O-U or Y-U?
No, that would have been good.
Yes.
That would have been very good. No, just WS. But and of course, this leading a lot of Sharpies out there to speculate, well, if the Dodgers do make it to the World Series, who might we see them playing opposite of, and the current front runner, at least among the, you know, the big mouths on social media, is the New York Yankees, because they also picked up several great players in trades. I know you're a Mets guy.
I am a Mets fan, so Yankees are the crosstown rival, but they're always one of those teams that you can never count them out. They've always had good success, and so we will see if they can this year.
Exactly. So a lot of people talking about those. Not so much. I just wanted to bring up a quick story. An Italian cyclist, Alessandro Adrioli, may have been caught out using a motorized bike. You know, there's lots of talk in these races about people putting tiny little motors in their bikes. And somebody caught him on a FLIR, the infrared, and his bike seat is just burning white hot.
Oh, boy.
So he's denying it, but he's not letting anyone look at his bike.
That's going to be some trouble. Well, we'll look forward to hearing more about that. Doug Bernard, thank you very much for joining me here. That wraps up the August 1st edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger, VOA engineer Thomas Blondet, and thank all of you out there for tuning in. I'm VOA's Andrew Palcheski here in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports. I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
For much of its brief existence, South Sudan has been mired in a civil war, a conflict that has killed tens of thousands of people and forced some 4 million to flee their homes, creating Africa's worst refugee crisis since the 1994 Rwandan genocide. A 2015 peace agreement and a transitional government formed in early 2016 failed to end the violence. In late May of this year, President Salva Kiir declared a unilateral government ceasefire and promised a release of political prisoners. But no prisoners have been released, and despite the ceasefire, heavy fighting has been reported in parts of the country, according to the UN. This is particularly true of the opposition stronghold near the town of Pagak in Upper Nile State. On July 24th, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, an 8-country regional development organization in East Africa that has been trying to mediate the situation in South Sudan, announced that it will convene a forum to revitalize implementation of the 2015 peace agreement. In late July, Norway, the United Kingdom, and the United States, known as the Troika in the context of the South Sudan peace effort, as well as the European Union, issued a statement condemning the continued violence in South Sudan. The PAGAK offensive is a clear violation of the unilateral ceasefire declared by President Salva Kiir and calls into question the government's commitment to reach peace through the national dialogue. The statement welcomed the IGAD decision to revitalize the South Sudan peace process. The proliferation of violence, displacement, and food insecurity renders any discussion of elections in the foreseeable future as an unnecessary diversion from the primary goals of achieving peace and reconciliation, said the Troika statement. South Sudan's leaders, neighbors, and regional and international partners must first focus on achieving peace in order to create the conditions needed to hold credible elections. To achieve these urgent goals, we look forward to the prompt revitalization of an inclusive and credible peace process by IGAD. Such progress would be required in order for the Troika and EU to commit further resources to institutions designed to implement the agreement.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll preview the August 8th Kenyan presidential race between incumbent Uhuru Kenyatta and former Kenyan Prime Minister Raila Odinga. The latest public opinion polls say the ballot is too close to call. That's on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth.
As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at UpfrontAfrica.